The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Okay, let's stop the music there. Let me go ahead and reset my board. I had it on auto. Sorry about that. Today's date is May 24th, 2016. It is a Tuesday afternoon. Of course, I'm broadcasting from the state of North Carolina. Good to be back on the airways in my absence from the airways at my regularly scheduled broadcasting time at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Of course, that's Monday, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Had some business-related things that prevented me from coming on air live. Tando Radio Show was missing from the airwaves live yesterday as well for the same reasons. You know, sometimes, man, we work calls and we have to do things behind the scenes in order to maintain what we do have and to increase the value of whatever it is that we are engaged in. We have to stop and take a look at opportunities and evaluate and analyze and see where that fits into whatever our goal in life is, our major mission in life. A lot of people don't have a mission in life. They just go through life programmed, you know, as worker bees and whatnot, because that is what the system of so-called education is producing. That is how the education curriculum, in fact, is molding these children to be. Just simply, you know, follow orders. You can either be cannon fodder or what have you in the military, or you could just be a worker bee, a mindless drone who, you know, just trying to get enough to survive. When there's plenty to go around and there are a lot of people with more than their share, their quote unquote fair share, so to speak. Their portions are larger than the masses of the people. Today is an open forum day. It is, again, May the 24th, so this is Black Talk Radio News Live. Whatever is on your mind, anything you would like to report. I do want to, again, thank our caller, a longtime listener from the New Jersey area, I believe, that called in and gave us that report of the NYC radio station with the world-renowned economist talking about how the 13th Amendment permits prison slavery, as he acknowledged that the prisoners who are striking in Alabama and Texas as well, even though he only mentioned Alabama, I believe, that they have put forth evidence that what they are suffering is, in fact, slavery as prescribed by the 13th Amendment, and they are not simply inmates. not simply convicts, but are in fact slaves and what have you. And so she called in, alerted us to that. We was able to pull that audio podcast up, play it for you on the air. I mean, it's just, I don't think people understand the importance of using correct language and getting that correct language out into the quote unquote mainstream. And when I say mainstream, I mean the corporate media properties. There are all, you know, there are small windows of opportunity that do present itself from time to time in order to get the truth out to the masses through the corporate media platforms, but that is far and few in between. So, you know, it is good to now starting to see more and more people with access to mainstream platforms, whether they're hosts, whether they are guests, speakers or whatnot, just to hear the whole language changed from mass incarceration to enslavement. This is mass enslavement, a evil that we thought was abolished in 1865, but indeed was merely transformed to or prescribed by the 13th Amendment to only be practiced in a certain kind of way. For slavery to be legal, you got to convict somebody of a crime. Actual questions of innocence or guilt or stacked juries, which is a story that's in the news today. Speaking of Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court just ruled that a Georgia inmate who was on death row had a right to challenge his conviction. Now, I'm not sure the details, whether he was just challenging the jury that sentenced him to death. I don't know if it was a different jury than the one who convicted him of whatever crime they convicted him of. But either way, eight justices they describe it as four liberals and four conservatives, and one of the dudes like a swing voter or whatnot. But of course, there is a seat missing from the SCOTUS. And so, but this was a near unanimous decision, 7-1, with Clarence Thomas. He's well known by now. If you don't know who Clarence Thomas is, he is the only black person with a black robe on sitting at the Supreme Court of the United States. So anyway, the seven court justices, all of them white, all of them suspected racists, and they all said that it was unconstitutional for this man, the selection of this man's jury that put him on death row. So I think that invalidates his conviction, or at least his placement on death row. But it brings up the larger question of jury racial bias in the jury selection process, and that's certainly an area of the so-called judicial systems, the system of enslavement, in fact the legal enslavement. I have talked about the problems with the way juries are picked. Number one, you got to be a registered voter. Doesn't matter if you vote or not. If you're not a registered voter in some states, you don't get selected for the jury pool, because I'm not going to speak for them, but perhaps they're like, well, you know, this person doesn't take voting seriously, so why would we think that they take jury duty seriously and whatnot? So, you know, or you have to have a valid driver's license, and that excludes a whole lot of people right there, especially when we're talking about similar things like voting. If you're an older person or you're a poor person and you don't have access to the documents like your birth certificate or whatnot, whatever issue with documentation that you're having that is preventing you or presenting obstacles to you being registered to vote, well, those same obstacles may exist for getting a valid driver's license or state ID. I think here in North Carolina, I don't think state IDs get you into the voting pool. Certainly, registering to vote gets you into the jury pool. But I know if you get a driver's license, you are in the, you know, you're put in the jury pool. Of course, if you've been convicted of any kind of crime, especially felonies or whatnot, in some states you have lifetime punishment, meaning that, you know, you do not get your right to vote right from after you've been released from slavery. You don't get that right back. Some of these people don't ever want you to get their right back because the system is designed to produce slaves, and we know slaves don't have rights, let alone exercise any kind of rights, you know, or even claim any kind of rights of their own. But Clarence Thomas was the lone dissenting justice in this case that, you know, is really, really could open up the door for the overturning of a lot of convictions where you can show that racism, racial bias, whatever name you want to come up with, discrimination was used in the selection of a jury. If that was used by the prosecution, then you could overturn that. So 7-1 decision, and Clarence Thomas is the lone ranger, so to speak. And, you know, I could have used a derogatory name right there, but I'm trying to work on myself. But the lone, we'll just call it what it is, proxy racism, acting as a proxy racist tool, but he with the extra mile. People might say, well, the white supremacists made him vote that way. They called him on the cell phone and they say, hey man, you've been enjoying that white woman you've been married to all these years and what have you. You enjoying your salary on the Supreme Court. You know, we had to ramrod you through there and whatnot. You know, you had pretty contentious confirmation hearing, but, you know, we got you up on there. You like getting paid going to speak at different places and selling books and all this notoriety. Then we need you to vote this way. That makes no, absolutely no kind of sense, except in a fantasy world. All right. Because then you have to explain, why would these white supremacists behind the scenes that have that kind of influence over Supreme Court justice, why would they only put that on Clarence Thomas, put that demand on him and send those orders to him on how to vote on this? And then all the other racist suspects, possible white supremacist justices, seven of them, and they all, you know, vote to say this was racism. Racism did play a factor in this and what have you. Then, you know, it makes no logical sense. If we want to excuse Justice Thomas's vote by saying white supremacists made him do it. This man went above and beyond the call of duty to practicing making sure that a system of injustice stays in place, a system of enslavement. So what are your thoughts on that, man? A lot of people not happy about that. I understand Clarence Thomas has been trending on Twitter. Again, lots of articles being written as him being a lone dissenter, this illogical, and his argument, his legal argument, what he's cloaking his proxy racism under is to say that he's concerned about procedure. The Supreme Court should have never taken the case, and that this was a state issue. Excuse me, but the point of the Supreme Court is to enforce the U.S. Constitution all across the so-called United States. Okay, to make sure that the states are not involved in patterns and practices that are in contradiction to the so-called Supreme Court law of the land. So the Supreme Court is designed to hear these type of cases. You know, it doesn't matter that the plaintiff is an inmate, an inmate in the Georgia prison system, prison slave system. It doesn't matter. And he's suing, you know, the defendant is the state of Georgia. That does not just simply make it a state issue. It's not no state's rights here, is what it seems to be Mr. Thomas' line of thinking is. if I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, that he just ain't straight up that self-hating that he goes above and beyond what a racist suspect would do. And we have seven other racist suspects, possible white supremacists, don't know for sure. Well, I take that back, six, because you got the Latina on there. I don't know how she identifies. I don't know if she classifies herself culturally as an Afro-Latina person of color or whatnot. So I stand corrected. Six racist suspects and one Latina all voted that the state of Georgia, the prosecutors in this case, practice racism. And Clarence Thomas stood alone saying, we shouldn't even have heard this case. So, what are your thoughts out there? You agree with Thomas on a technicality that the Supreme Court's job is not to tell the states how they apply law as it pertains to state law and as it the Constitution, which is supposed to be the universal law of the land and whatnot. So, I mean, you know, if you, whatever reason you agree with Thomas, you're more than welcome to articulate that. I'll give you 2 minutes. Okay. You know, but this man, this is the epitome of just hatred, black hatred, hatred for black people. Just anti-blackness to the fullest. Just really internalized self-hatred there with Thomas there. So much he has so much self-hatred that he hates everybody that look like him, everybody that shares any kind of characteristic with him. He probably hate, I don't know if him and his European descendant wife, I don't even think they have any children. I could be wrong, but I've never seen an article discussing their children, and I wouldn't be surprised if they are, in fact, a childless couple who have been married for quite a few decades here, maybe 20, 30, 40 years. Clarence Thomas, you know, I'm not sure how long he met her and married her after, you know, his time at the whatever agency he was at with Juanita Hill and whatnot. So they've been married a long time, but I don't think they have any kids. I could be wrong. They could have adopted or anything. But again, if he doesn't have any biological children, it wouldn't surprise me, because he just strikes me as being so anti-black that if them children come out with any kind of color, with any kind of kink in their hair, that, you know, he's just gonna be so disgusted with them and what have you. So I don't know, but the man, the anti-blackness is strong with that one. It just really is. So things are heating up as well in this email scandal with Hillary Clinton. Now, I've been paying attention to revelations from the Judicial Watch, which is the right-wing conservative watchdog group that watches, you know, Washington, D.C. Sure, they're partisan. Sure, they've been after the Clintons for a long time. But, you know, that don't matter. The evidence that is being produced in this civil Freedom of Information Act request against the civil lawsuit in federal courts against the State Department. And now, you know, with questioning actually starting of the aides closest to Hillary Clinton to discover why she set up a private email server outside of the government system and used it, the private email server, exclusively, no Secretary of State, no employee, period, not just Secretary of State, no employee, period, of the United States government has ever did all work-related business from some private email account or server they set up on, you know, wherever they set it up at or however they set it up. They used any kind of third-party companies, which I believe they did. And what, that's never in the history that I know of anybody that works for the federal government. No. And so this is heating up, but I suspect the certain branches of the corporate media it's going to continue what we've known as, well, let's just call it a media whiteout. All right, where, you know, just no coverage whatsoever, no reception, nothing but white snow on the television when you turn it on, or white noise coming out the radio because, you know, there's nothing broadcasting. Well, they are whiting out. We are under whiteout conditions on mainstream corporate media. I'm talking about CBS, ABC, MSNBC, CNN. You know, I take that back. MSNBC did one report, I believe it was them, on update on her email situation. Or were they? No, they, I take that back. They were talking about her losing in the polls to Donald Trump. But there has, except for Fox News, there has been a total media whiteout of Hillary Clinton's email scandal, with revelations being reported from this civil trial that is going on in federal court again. What's the name of the group? The Judicial Watch, with Tom, I think his name is Fitton, something like that. Tom Fitton. They've been after the Clintons for a long time, legally and whatnot. And a lot of analysts and commentators, political commentators, have been saying they hit the jackpot on this one. For all the litigation, all the years they've been chasing the Clintons down with their various, you know, legal scandals and what have you, suing for information and whatnot, going all the way back to the Whitewater scandal. For all of that, you know, they hadn't been able to take down the Clinton political machine, but they may have, in fact, stumbled upon accidentally by happenstance what could in fact finally bring a close to the Clinton regime politics. I don't even think Chelsea Clinton, she would be so tainted 30 years from now, she couldn't be president because she'll be so tainted by this. So a total media whiteout on this. You had an aide who was the top State Department employee. See, this is the thing, though. A lot of these people, these aides in her small circle, they were employed at the State Department by you, the taxpayer, in the federal government, as well as getting paid on the side as, I guess, independent contractors or employees of the Clinton Foundation, which is in the news today, as the Justice Department, headed by Loretta Lynch, has announced an investigation into the governor of Virginia. I forget the man's name. We could check out those details right quick. But he's being investigated for bribery and public corruption. It looks like there's some campaign donation irregularities going on there, violations and what have you. He was sitting on the board of the Clinton Foundation at one time, and so there's a lot of cross donation going there with Clinton donors or Clinton Foundation donors donating huge amounts of cash to the Clinton Foundation, and then also funneling money to political campaigns and businesses associated with the Clintons. You know, that whole Clinton money making political public service whatever scam they have been running to enrich themselves and what have you. So that's the governor of Virginia now coming into the sights. And they got me to thinking, man, Obama, I couldn't understand for the life of me, other than he cut a deal with Hillary Clinton in 2008 to endorse him and work to get him elected, for her to drop out of the contest in June, which she did not drop out until June. Here we are in May, people trying to force Bernie Sanders out. She didn't drop out till June, and she was calling for debates and what have you. And she didn't drop out until she was recorded on an interview saying that the reason she shouldn't drop out is because Barack Obama could get assassinated tomorrow. Y'all, see, y'all didn't forgot a whole lot about that woman. Yeah, seriously, she said that. She suggested that he could get Bobby Kennedy'd. So y'all remember Bobby Kennedy, the younger brother of John Kennedy, who ran for president after his brother was assassinated. He was a former attorney general, and he was seeking a presidency, and he was assassinated in a hotel in California, I do believe. And so she was suggesting last year that Obama could get Bobby Kennedy assassinated, so why should I drop out and what have you? Y'all forget how nasty and crude and calculating and y'all, I mean, you just have short-term memory loss, like you know, smoking too much dope or something, doing something that you then forgot all this. So but all of this is putting pressure on the Clinton campaign, all the supporters, all the super delegates, all of them. It's putting pressure on all of them. This woman could be indicted. The clock is ticking right now. From the first interview that they did with the Clinton aide, with the in the court proceedings, with the sole purpose of why did she set up this private server, Tom Fitton said that because of the rules, he couldn't just come out and quote some of the dude's testimony, because the State Department has 3 days to review this testimony and redact any portions and claim he, you know, is violating security or this is top secret information or whatnot, and retroactively classifying, and just to prevent the public from knowing what he said about why Hillary Clinton set up this server. But what Tom Fitton did say was that what he said, testified to under oath, is potentially devastating, not only for Hillary Clinton, but also for the Obama administration. So, you know, this is very interesting. The whole media whiteout, China, Korea, all of these attempts to create the public perception that Hillary Clinton is, you know, like a Teflon Don. They keep throwing stuff at her, but nothing sticks to her and what have you. And these are all just conspiracies and lies to take her down. No, that, you know, that's not what's going on here. These are self-inflicted wounds. And I hope it takes her down, because I came into this campaign season as a political commentator, as a broadcaster, as a digital radio broadcaster, as a independent black voter. As I came into this election season knowing, not even paying attention to the Republican side at all, my number one intent was stopping Hillary. Stopping Hillary, no matter who she was running against on the Democratic side, no matter who she was going to face in a general election, my number one aim is to stopping Hillary Clinton, and by doing my part to inform people about her true character, about her lack of integrity, about the war crimes that she has committed. Now, I'm not making up stuff well documented on this radio program using her own emails. The regime changes, the capitalism, imperialism, the support for modern day legalized slavery and human trafficking, that remains my goal. As terrible as Donald Trump may be, as some people think he is, his carnival barking doesn't concern me. His dog whistle blowing to the races to win the Republican nomination. You know, those Republicans, what they're mad about is he was willing to come in as a celebrity, as a reality star. And everybody knows the type of people that the GOP has been targeting, you know, but trying to be slick with their program. They didn't want to seem like too overtly, you know, playing to the racist crowd or white nationalism or whatnot. But Trump hasn't minded. And it was a winning strategy for him to capture the Republican nomination. Now, you know, he as he pivots to the general election, now he might tone it down, as they suggest him. I'm not concerned by Donald Trump, who has no legislative policy history. Hillary Clinton does. Legislative policy history, executive branch policy history, and, you know, just a whole history that the general public in general, we have not been fooled by the mainstream, the lack of mainstream coverage or the media spin. I mean, this woman is polling higher in unfavorability ratings or likability ratings. Well, she's seen as unfavorable more than Donald Trump. Now, that's saying something right there. For all the negative media that Donald Trump has gotten compared to the fluff, Clinton-friendly media lies, propaganda spin to paint this woman as being, you know, a grandmother, a doting grandmother, and what have you, and a policy wonk and what have you, as being harmless. And some, man, this woman has supported things and engaged in things that have led directly and indirectly to the loss of life in the millions all over the planet. If we even just count her vote for the Iraq war, then we could throw in what she did to Libya as Secretary of State and what she supported in Honduras. Millions of people, man, millions of people lost their lives. She has a lifelong achievement award for advancing modern day prison slavery and human trafficking and whatnot. So, you know, the vast majority of people that are being polled on Hillary Clinton find her very, very untrustworthy, unlikable, and what have you. So those are just a few stories that's out there that I want to throw out there on the table for discussion, commentary, what have you. Of course, if you would like to share anything, our studio lines are open. 704-951-5030. Will be on air for about another 27 minutes. On the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. If you already dialed in, hit *61 to comment on air. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. We'll be back on the other side.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And you are listening right now to Black Talk Radio News. Again, this is a hour long, sometimes we go over an hour, news program where we focus on social political issues of the day, focus on 21st century slavery and human trafficking first and foremost. I mean, what more important thing should we be focused on than slavery? Because I do believe that it is from slavery that all the other ills that we see in society on a global scale emanate from slavery. People wanting to practice slavery against other people who would be the victims of slavery. Every other code, every law, You know, it all, you can trace it back to slavery, man. You can really trace it back, the levying of taxes, all of that, you know, slave-like conditions and whatnot. But we focus on chattel slavery. Chattel slavery meaning that human beings are treated and viewed as pieces of property. That's all that simply means. People won't talk about chattel slavery like it's in the past, but even a soldier, when I was in the United States military for the 6 years that I was in, and I wore those dog tags around my neck, that those dog tags were saying I was property of the United States government. So I was a piece of property with a serial number and everything. Same thing with prison slaves. They're property of the state, property of the federal government, property of the private prison corporation. Chattel slavery still exists. Chattel slavery still exists, and by any means necessary, whether that's through economics, whether that's through politics, whether that is through anything we're working towards, we should have that goal in the back of our minds, you know, whether it's going to help directly or indirectly, you know. So news of the day, just talking a little bit about some of the news of the day. Again, as I've been stating, as I read Clarence Thomas with the extra mile, boy, are people not happy about that? But you know, this isn't nothing new. Non-white people, black people, been practicing proxy racism ever since the system of racism was implemented as a control, a control mechanism to keep slavery in place. All right, that's where racism come from, a system of laws and codes and whatnot that took away the rights of non-white people and subjugated them to the authority of anybody classified as white, and of course the law and what have you. So, you know, it was because of slave rebellions. We would call them mixed slave rebellions, where everybody wasn't so melanated, and this is before racial classifications and whatnot. And it was really, you know, based on, you know, if you got kidnapped or if somebody sold you into slavery or if you was in a condition of poverty and all of that. You know, when all those people banded together to overthrow the plantation owners and whatnot, the plantation owners cut a deal with the non-melanated slaves and said, you know what, we'll stop enslaving you, we'll make you the slave catchers, the slave overseers, we'll give you jobs on the ships to Africa to bring these slaves back and whatnot. We'll give you these privileges. You can own firearms. Even free black people won't be allowed to own firearms. You can punch a black person in the mouth and they can't even strike you back in self-defense. All of this was codified, and this is before the United States. This was during the colonial, as they call it, the colonial period with the 13 colonies and whatnot. So, you know, it is just really important that we study history. And in my study of that history, proxy racism has always been a problem. There's always been someone who has attempted to gain, and when I say someone non-white who has attempted to gain white privilege. And you can buy white privilege. You certainly can. I mean, they still might call you a nigga behind your back and prefer you not, you know, marry one of their daughters. It just depends on how much money you got, how much, you know, wealth can we generate off of you. And Clarence Thomas is in that circle. He got up in that circle where he's been a useful tool of the system of white supremacy and slavery, and he's willing to be a proxy. But, I mean, this right here, he had all the cover he needed to just go along with the crowd and say it is incorrect for prosecutors to pick jurors based on race. I mean, from what I was hearing from the story people, they put B's, the letter B, and the letter N next to the names of African / so-called Americans. They're those prospective jurors. They put and highlighted them with a green magic marker to strike, use all their strikes against all these people. We don't want no niggas on the jury because they might empathize with this other black person and find him not guilty or recommend life in prison instead of, you know, giving him the death penalty. So, I mean, this is a long practice. This is a practice, you know, that was addressed by the North Carolina State Legislature prior to the Republicans coming into power in 2010. The Democrats who were in power at that time passed legislation that would allow black death row inmates to have their cases looked at and taken off of death row, have their sentences commuted to life in prison. If they could prove race was a factor in jury selection, it wouldn't set them free, but at least they wouldn't have a date with, you know, the executioner, and they have life in prison with the possibility of proving their innocence, if in fact they are innocent, later down the road. We see those kind of exonerations happening all the time. Well, Republicans came in power in 2010 and they repealed that law that the governor, former governor of North Carolina, signed to try to practice just a little bit of justice with in terms of the death penalty in North Carolina. So, again, this decision could have wide-ranging impact across America because now it isn't just, obviously, the North Carolina Supreme Court found, you know, didn't interfere or do anything to stop the North Carolina legislature or whatnot. I don't know if they could because they didn't pass anything. They just simply repealed some legislation that I guess the Supreme Court, North Carolina Supreme Court, had found constitutional in allowing, you know, these victims of racism in the slave system to challenge their convictions, you know, based on racism used in jury selection. So, but the Republicans just simply repealed it, so the courts didn't have to cover it. Now, this Supreme Court decision, regardless of Clarence Thomas showing out, just really going above and beyond, despite him being a lone figure showing out, this decision could apply or should apply to people on death row across the land, across in every state, including the colonies, you know, U.S. Virgin Islands, that's their colonial name, the Puerto Rico, that's a colony. So, you know, it would apply to anybody that's been sentenced to death and racism was a factor in the jury selection. Man, we probably talking about maybe 75% of cases, man. Again, they do everything they can to keep us off the juries in the first place. The goal has always been all white juries. They set it out that way when they first start introducing these codes. No black people can own firearms. No black people can practice self-defense. No black people own juries. No black people can testify or be a witness against a white person and all of that. And over the decades, you know, or centuries, we've slowly unraveled some of that code and repealed some of that code. But then it's all about implementation. Then you don't necessarily need the explicit racist language in the code in order to practice racism. You just have to, it'll be an unspoken code in its application, whether, you know, proxy racists and racist white supremacists together just had this unspoken rule, you know, that this is how it's going to be. We're going to target black folks with these particular laws. We're going to target Hispanics. We're going to target poor people and what have you. So, I mean, this very important court decision in terms of, you know, bringing relief to people's lives who literally hang in the balance. It's just a big shame that, you know, the headline is Clarence Thomas clowning on the Supreme Court. That's the headline that I've been seeing. That's what went viral on Twitter. Now, you know, speaking of Supreme Court, you know, that is a very important position. As we know, President Obama appointed or nominated a guy to take over Antonin Scalia's seat. Anton Scalia, the former justice who was found dead in what I heard was rich people's playground, possibly whorehouse and all of this and that. They didn't do no autopsy or anything. All we know is he had a heart attack. We don't know how that heart attack came about or anything like that. But that's a very important position that has opened up, and that man was a racist. Right now, this, you know, with them stalling on President Obama's nomination, Garlic, I think the dude's name is Merrick Garland. I do not like the pick. He is down the middle, so to speak, a moderate who is a little bit too corporate-y or corporate conservative for my liking and what have you. Also, may not be a good pick for human rights, recognizing human rights and what have you. So I'm kind of glad the Republicans is blocking him, although I've heard some Republicans calling for the Senate to call Obama on his bluff and that this really guy would be a great Supreme Court justice for the right wing and what have you. I don't think that's going to happen. And I do think that Bernie Sanders, if he gets this nomination, if he in fact can beat Trump, which he is polling in general election and matchups with Trump, he beats Trump in all of them, unlike Hillary Clinton. And so this is very important. And we know Bernie Sanders, as far as his platform goes, has abolitionist elements, especially if we're talking about fighting any aspect of slavery. I know he mainly focuses on the private prison side. Also he does take a look at what they call reforming, you know, so he has an abolitionist friendly platform, doesn't go as far as what we think it should go, but it goes farther than anybody else. Donald Trump supports private prisons. Hillary Clinton all of a sudden says she doesn't support private prisons, but you know, you're going to believe that her words, or you're going to believe 30 years worth of financial records showing her link to private prisons and even her personal investments into companies that use private prison slavery. You know, so, I believe Bernie Sanders should stay in this. She could be indicted at any time. The superdelegates could flip their vote at any time. You know, they got a decision to make. Do they want to take the Democratic Party down with them and hurt all down ballot so-called Democrats by nominating Hillary Clinton, a woman who is under investigation, who has a shady past and record, along with her husband, who would be a big part of her administration and what have you. So the superdelegates have a decision to make. I know they was all promised butter biscuits and committee appointments and all this for lining up behind Hillary before even one single vote or caucus was held or vote cast in a primary. But, you know, they have that option to, they don't actually cast their votes until the convention. And if they keep looking at Hillary losing favorability polls matched up to Donald Trump, they could flip at any time. Because now there have been several polls in a real clear politics poll, average of several different polls shows Hillary Clinton losing to Donald Trump, continues to show Sanders beating Donald Trump. So yes, that Sanders should stay in it. He has an argument to make to the superdelegates. You got California coming up about to vote on the Democratic side. That's 400 plus delegates. She's only ahead of them by 300 or so delegates, pledged delegates. She could be caught in pledged delegates. But the media perception is to keep drilling into the minds of the masses that this is over, that she is going to be the nominee. Nothing is going to change that. Nothing can change that. Well, you know, if that was true, then, you know, they wouldn't wouldn't award delegates the way they do. It would just be winner take all. Some states do that, but most states do not. Now, I've read an article that Bernie Sanders was able to get Cornel West, Native American activist, I forget her name, but five people total on the committee that's going to write the Democratic platform. What is the Democratic platform? Their agenda. Do you think, what was the guy named that was running for president from Maryland? I can't remember his name. Early on, he was in the race. You had two other people who was on the Democratic side, not many people, in addition to Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, of course. But do you think that they have gonna have any say on the Democratic platform come convention? Do you think any delegates are going to be making arguments on their behalf to superdelegates to change their votes or declarations or whatnot, and to take into account national polling against Donald Trump and all of these things into consideration? No, because they dropped out already. They have not won the amount of delegates that Bernie Sanders has had. It isn't a race to the finish line. And then it's all over, like, you know, pin a medal on my chest, I came in first place. No, second place, even in some cases third place, have tremendous influence in shaping the agenda moving forward for the next Democratic administration. Only way you get a seat at that table is by forcing your way onto it. You ain't even got to play nice or nothing like that. But again, a lot of our people, and I'm talking to black people, we don't understand. We're not educated and taught how politics work, how that whole process works. It's too complicated for us when we think about it. It's just too big. It's too vague. It's too whatever. We don't get into the minutiae and the details of how power is taken in this country. So, you know, Hillary Clinton now is going back on her word about debating before this June, I think it's June the 7th, California primary. Again, 400 plus voters, 430 something voters, delegates are at stake here. That could close the gap right then and there. If he took 75% of those delegates, man, they'd be neck and neck in pledged delegates heading into the convention, not to mention the other primaries. And then these voters are looking at, also, they are looking at these polls that's showing Donald Trump beating Hillary Clinton, or Hillary Clinton's unfavorability rating surpassing that of the carnival barker, redneck, whispering Donald Trump. I mean, come on, man. You have to really be a terrible candidate to poll in a general election worse than this, than Donald Trump. First time ever running for a political office. First time ever running for political office. You've been, your whole life has been pointed towards this moment of trying to become the first woman president or CEO of USA Inc. And it don't look like you can pull it off against Trump. So these voters, these superdelegates, are considering all of this, man. They're considering all of this. And so, you know, my whole thing is, number one, stopping Clinton, because she's a liar. You can't believe nothing she says. She said a month or so ago she would debate. She agreed to a debate with Bernie Sanders in the month of May. So he agreed to do it on Fox News. Her camp played games like they always play games. Now she's saying, no, I don't want to debate, even though I agreed to this debate a month or so ago. I don't want to debate ahead of the California primary. I just want to focus on Donald Trump. How presumptuous of her. Really? How's that playing with you California voters, that she doesn't want to, you know, address any other issues going on in California right now? The environmental issues, the prison slavery issues, the workers, you know, pay issues, just so many issues in the nation's largest state and what have you, that could be addressed in this debate. But, you know, again, the DNC set it up this way. That's why they limited the number of debates that the Democrats would have, to limit the exposure of Hillary Clinton to new voters. They don't want to put her in a situation where she got to answer any tough questions or you know, she can't 100% control the environment. As the on a side note, a memo that came from the State Department, I'm telling you that judicial-wide civil suit is the gift that keeps giving. There's a memo that was circulating by the State Department saying Hillary Clinton media operations. I got the PDF file. I ain't had time to go through it. I'm gonna go through it. But basically what she was saying is they were coming up with a strategy identifying talk show hosts like On The View, like Ellen DeGeneres and other Steve Harvey, Oprah was named, and where these people are and these networks are susceptible to helping you advance the Clinton agenda. I mean, they had people talk about Donald Trump's narcissism. What about Hillary Clinton's and the Clintons? Clinton.com email? That was the email they used. And this was named Clinton's, if I can remember the title, Clinton's 21st Century Media Strategy or something, some narcissistic name to it like that. But this was a plan. This was a plan for her to go on to Ellen and not be asked any kind of tough policy questions or whatnot, or lob the softball question. She only gonna answer 15-second answer, whatnot, and do the nay-nay and dance her way off the stage, you know. Or go on that talk radio program in New York, I forget the name of it, the hip hop station and whatnot, and where she talks about, you know, I carry hot sauce in my pocketbook just like Beyonce. All of that has been scripted years in advance, people. Years in advance. That's what this internal State Department document shows. And again, this just goes to show you Malcolm X was dead on point when he talked about the power of the media having the ability to control the minds of the masses. And so that'll be an interesting memo to take a look at once I've had more time to look at that. We'll certainly do that on a program. If you're on Facebook, go to Black Talk Media Project Facebook page. I posted an article there that I think you will find very interesting. But the name of this article is Mind Control Theories and Techniques Used by Mass Media. Mass Media, this is what I wrote. Mass Media is the most powerful tool used by the ruling class to manipulate the masses. It shapes. No, this isn't my writing. This is theirs. This is an excerpt. Mass media is the most powerful tool used by the ruling class to manipulate the masses. It shapes and molds opinions and attitudes and defines what is normal and acceptable. This article looks at the workings of mass media through the theories of its major thinkers, its power structure, and the techniques it uses in order to understand its true role in society. And again, Malcolm X said that media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet because it controls the minds of the masses. It has the power to make the innocent look guilty and the guilty look innocent, and that's power. And his statement has been borne out as being absolutely 100% on point and true by countless media studies that have been done since his death. And even before his death, this article has writings from major media moguls and, you know, players in the news media industry who openly wrote about this in various books and other publications. Check that out. We need to learn these techniques. We need to know how to harness them because they do work and they're being used on our people. Although we won't target our masses with harmful programming, we want to produce programming that's edifying to them, that is providing useful information, just sharing the truth according to the research that we have done, and throw it out there for debate, you know. Whereas the corporations, is six of them that exist that control 90% of the media, their programming is harmful. And they help people, criminals like Hillary Clinton look like innocent little angels who are in fact victims of this right wing conspiracy to take her down because she's a woman or whatever. This has especially been successful in the media that has targeted our people in terms of this political campaign. It really has. The voting patterns of black voters is just so illogical. It just boggles the mind, except if you understand media. If you understand why these celebrity endorsements, why Hillary Clinton ran out to get all these celebrity endorsements from rappers and comedians and entertainers and actors and whatnot, why she was popping in on the so-called Black Girls Rock or Black Women's Rock, whatever the name of the little event that they had that was televised by BET, which is Black Entertainment Television, owned by Viacom, you know, majority of white people. I think they got one black person sit on their board. That's why she got access like that. And this is really being eye-opening to me. But just being able to sit back and watch these media techniques and propaganda being employed and seeing it work. Seeing it work. So we know it works. How are we going to use it? So with that, I'm just going to employ people to support our Black Media crowdfunding efforts of the North Carolina-based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. The only way that we can overcome the anti-black media programming targeting our people is to create our own community platform. It gotta start grassroots. It's gotta start grassroots because they got the national media on lock, those platforms on lock. So we had to build our own platforms. Have individuals living in the communities that are running these media centers so they are able to market locally and connect with the people and be part of the community just like terrestrial radio stations should be and are. They, you know, you see the radio station van out in the community and whatnot, even though they just giving away free stuff and they're not really engaged in any kind of social political organizing unless a corporation, you know, is fronting something or what have you. But that is what I mean about community-based radio. It's got to be run by individuals in the community, and we have a plan to do that at a fraction of the cost of what it would take if we were like to say, oh, we're going to buy up or offer to buy these radio stations in these, you know, different radio markets in Detroit, Philadelphia, wherever we see, you know, lots of black people congregated or whatnot. Some of the smaller towns and cities, still a lot of, you know, huge population, maybe 30, 40, 50% sometime black, maybe in the South or somewhere. Doesn't matter, you know. But instead of trying to buy up the existing terrestrial radio stations or whatnot, which is very, very expensive, you know, all we need do is either purchase standalone buildings, build them, whatever, lease the spaces, and then, you know, set up our digital media operations right there. Right there. People come in and pull their shift if they're radio personalities, do their video broadcast if they are video casting, all internet based, man. Fraction of the cost of what it would take terrestrial. Now, because of emergency situations coming up, the internet can be taken out of play globally, regionally. There can be an interruption in services, may not ever come back. So then you would want these media centers to be equipped with low power FM capabilities, even if it's just CB radio, some kind of terrestrial backup capabilities in any event of emergencies that disrupt internet, the internet infrastructure. and what have you. So we had a plan, we had a vision, but we need the funding, because we do not take funding from corporations like, you know, any of the big six corporations that, oh, we, you know, want to act like we support diversity in media, so we gonna give Black Talk Media Project this $10,000 grant, annual grant, as long as they don't talk too seriously about coming up with solutions to the system of slavery that produces racism. No, we can't have them talking about that. We can't talk about how, have them talking about how we control the programming that's programming their minds to vote against their own interests or act against their own interests or to see villains as saviors and saviors as villains. And we don't, we long as you stop that, we'll make sure that you get funded. No, that's not us. It will never be us as long as I'm alive and I'm leading the Black Talk Media Project. So it is people powered radio, people funded radio, man. That is the only way that we can maintain our independence and, you know, work together in a collaborative manner to even counter that beast that they got in place right now. So anyway. Moving on. Stay tuned. 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time will be a live broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. Excuse me, did I say Black Talk Radio News? I did. I meant Tando Radio Show. All right. Just other program notes. Tando coming up at 6 o'clock tomorrow. We are working on scheduling a guest for New Abolitionist Radio that comes on Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, that took part in a community action to stop a private prison or jail or detention facility from being built in their community. I was talking to Brother Kwabena from that area, who's with Clear the Airways Project, who we interviewed not that long ago and who's going to be a regular contributor on this broadcast. I was talking to him, and he was saying, like, they tried twice, the GEO group twice tried to sneak into our community, set up a private prison, jail or prison, youth detention facility, and the community rallied together and were able to stop that. So we definitely want to hear from individuals who was involved and that tremendous act of abolitionism and resisting the system of slavery on a local level. All right, so that's what we're trying to plan for you tomorrow on New Abolitionist Radio. So make sure you tune in. Also, Tanya Free and Friends talk show, usually on live at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesdays, will not be on air. They're taking a break this week. I don't think that I have anything else that I need to share with you today. Yeah, I don't see anything, but there's just so much going on, man. There's so much going on. Things, stories that are important, we try to share. We can share so much more through our social media accounts and what have you. You know, the officer in Baltimore was found not guilty by a jury of his quote-unquote peers. Within, you know, that jury pool was pulled from within Baltimore. So what can we say? They found him not guilty. It wasn't a hung jury. You know, some of them said guilty, others said not guilty. They couldn't come to an agreement. So it was a hung jury. No, they acquitted this dude, not guilty. Can't charge him again. Can't bring him up on those same charges again. Double jeopardy. That's in the Freddie Gray case in Baltimore. That's definitely not good news there. On the slave catching front and what have you. We have posted some stories on the Watch a Cop page. So check that out. I just can't think of anything right now that comes to mind. So, but I'll be back on air with another broadcast of Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed on Thursday afternoon, and Brother Kwabena of Clear the Airways Project will be stopping in to give us a report on their activities to clean up the terrestrial radio of this slave ship hop, this violent media that they're using to program young people in impoverished area to make them more susceptible or more likely to go in their community and commit acts of violence. Again, stop sleeping on the power of media. It has mind control properties. They've been studying it, pour a lot of money into developing these techniques, and they work. They work. So, with that said, recognize the fact that there is a global war going on. It has many different names, but I feel the root cause is you have people who want to practice slavery, and you have people who are resisting enslavement, and that's a war. And all ills that are facing people on the planet emanate from slavery. That's including racism. What you call, what many people, including myself, have called white supremacy is actually a pseudonym, a metaphor, acronym, whatever, for slavery. That's what the history says. That's what the 1600 Virginia slave codes say. All right, racism is a byproduct of slavery. So recognize this fact, become a new abolitionist, do whatever it is possible that you can do, that's in your power to do, depending upon your resources, your skill set, your strong suits, whatever. Become an abolitionist, because slavery ain't gonna end itself. We end slavery, we will, I believe, solve the majority of the world's problems. I believe that slavery, again, is the root cause. The root cause. So let's end slavery, y'all. Be safe behind these enemy lines. Don't become easily enslaved. Don't do stupid stuff to catch the attention of a slave catcher, like speeding down the highway with no seatbelt, with a blunt hanging out your ear. None of that, man. Don't be, you know, pulling up through a strip mall, riding through the strip mall, wherever you at, turning up a 40-ounce, you know, drinking and driving's against the law. Don't do that kind of stupid stuff, man, to make yourself an easy target for these slave catchers out there. All right, that's just common sense. So y'all be safe out there. Be codified. And at the end of the day, let's all end this system of slavery. Peace and blessings to all.